This is half an hour recording from a lecture of Paula Harris on the UFO Congress in Norway in the autumn of 2017 at Stiklestad, Norway. Paula Harris had a near connection with Philip Corso, and the team here is on Philip Corso and his books.
On the phone and said, I'm sorry I ever wrote the book. I am among a group of vultures. He said, I did work at the Pentagon. I was in research and development. I did do these things. I came forth not for money, because when he was buried, they had to borrow money to bury him.
Paula Harris,
it was after he was dead that the money was made by the people. But the thing is this, that it is a situation within the ufological field that people as brains from the Philip Corso. And why did he talk? Because I asked him, I said, well, Colonel, I'm 83 years old. Why did you come out? He said, because we had made an agreement with General Trudeau that the last one alive would tell the truth. And he said, the reason I did it, and he showed me his three grandchildren. He said, for these three boys, that part of the agreement was that we bring the boys to Italy, because Colonel Corso's background was that he was from Sicilian, and he wanted his grandchildren to see Italy, so we paid for him and his grandchildren and his daughter-in-law to come the two times he came. But it was very dangerous when he was sick, very dangerous. And in my book, I talk about, and I don't know if I have time to talk about, one situation where I pulled Colonel Corso out of a car because we were on a mountaintop and we were left alone in the car, and I thought, this car is going to blow up, and I pulled him out of the car because I thought, don't sit in this car. Everybody left. We're here alone. And I will tell you that his death is suspect. And that is a real whistleblower. Because what he was telling the world was that there was an economy behind the artifacts of crashes. Mm-hmm. There's an economy, because the way the military-industrial complex thinks is that this is a gold mine, because if they can back engineer what's in those, and he will tell you, they will become the most powerful military on Earth. So he even said to me, because he's just Army. The Army Air Force was together in 1945 was Army Air Force, they were together. Then it split up in 1947, where it was Army and Air Force. So Colonel Corso said, what I had in my hands, and he will talk about it here, so I don't have to talk about it. Thank God we filmed him. He's talking about it. In everything that I do, I do not talk about it. It's the people that talk about it to me, and I record it. So my job and my legacy will only be to leave you the original people, not to make judgments on them. I leave you the original people. You make a decision, and you will say, why didn't they let him speak in the United States? Many reasons. One of them is that there was a lot of jealousy in the 1947 50th anniversary, because his book had the name Roswell on it, and all the other books weren't selling because this one was selling the greatest. So those guys started looking. They didn't sit at a table and say, Colonel, what do you know, and you can help us. They said, his book is selling more than this book. Colonel, come to have coffee with us. Tell us everything you know. We've been working on Roswell for a long time. That doesn't happen. They said he's lying. He's trying to make money. And he's 83 years old. And his children, his grandchildren were there. So, and I'll tell you how I got to meet him, because it was not something I wanted to do. It was not a case I wanted to do. However, the first thing you're going to see is we were in San Marino, And it's in my book, and he said, and this is the permission I have to talk to you, he talked about what he wanted to have happen after he died. So, Colonel, we're doing what you want. So you can play that piece.
I'm 83 years old, so I have to get two younger ones to carry the stuff.
Yeah, a woman, I said, I can't do it. And he said, yes, you can. You'll learn. You're a soldier. You'll learn. And he died in 1997. The 50th anniversary was 1997. He died in 1999, 2 years later. And, it was only 2 years. And I do a lot of stories. This is just one of them. So he kind of said, it's up to you. I'm going to be dead. You have to talk. So this is why I've decided to do this for the second part of my presentation, but I would like to play his own words. And this man is not lying. So he will talk about what he did.
Well, girl, she didn't quite understand it. When I tell you that there were two implants for the inductee, that makes you authentic. Use it. You make your living at it. And I like you. Use my name if you want to. Go ahead. Tell them, of course, they'll call me this. But it's an area that we never did anything about. We never put out research and development projects. We never looked into the reason for it. Because we had our hands full of what we were doing. That wasn't my job to do that. And I briefed the general that we should do it. Watch it, but don't do anything about it. We didn't spend the money on a penny on projects of that type. Our money went, like I told you, in the night viewing device, millions of dollars. That was a product of war. Soldiers of Vietnam could see the enemy at night. That's what we were working on, lasers, fiber optic, communication. So those were the main thrust of our organization. The extraterrestrial himself, I will say, that's the greatest gift they gave us, and we did nothing with it. And who was in charge? I was. So that meant I did nothing with it. Now, in my old age, maybe I feel guilty, and I've been writing about it now. When I wrote to my own doctor, I put in an envelope, took it to the doctor, this friend of mine, and on the envelope I wrote, help, doctor. He knew what I meant to the lymphatic system. He's a surgeon. He's expert at that. He operates in that area. I'm no doctor. I can't carry that on. I don't know anything about it. What I know about the lymphatic system, what I've read. But here's a man who saves people's lives, like he saved mine doing that. Knowing what's there. The lungs, not all the same thing. Experts have to come into this and look at this entity or this being. After all, he is a biological entity. All these stories of clone, all against religion, and it's awful, man wants to live forever, and it affects the emotion. That's all baloney. It doesn't enter this area alone, at all. It doesn't enter this area at all. Because that clone was made for another purpose. He's not in the ordinary sense that we write what clones are like. Made it for another purpose, to travel in space. They want to see what space is like. They came here. The way that was made with the flying saucer, they would have never made it here. Maybe they have something else, I don't know, but I don't know any.
Can I switch to another subject for a second?
Yeah.
That was in Brasilia at the first world forum in Brasilia. A guy named Cole Shelburne. This researcher stated that in the last 50 years, maybe, but to be more precise, 35 years, one of the 67 UFO researchers died for unknown causes, such as suicides or heart attacks, very, very sudden heart attacks with no medical records before, and eventually brain tumors and so far so on. His theory was that the UFO researchers are very keen to disappear sooner or later for no reasons, for no apparent reasons.
I can give you credibility on that story, because what you told me, there are many, many cases where people die from tumors when they haven't never had any before. There are many cases when they die from disease which they never showed before. There are many hundreds, thousands of cases where people never had a heart pain and died all at once of a heart attack. There's too many cases where that happens to humans. So I can't go back and say, when a doctor comes to me and say, hey, Course, what are you talking about? I know about 1,000 cases of people died of heart attack. I can't isolate it to the flying saucer cause that, because there's too much of that happening every day anyway. Yeah, I could say that, I can't come and tell you, I know. It happens every day, suicides. You know, see,
yeah,
I can't
the
come
irony
and say,
is that he was asking him a question about my boss. He's asking him a question about how dangerous you put the PowerPoint. About how dangerous it was what he was talking about. And I don't have any of my books here. You have to go to Amazon.com for Conversations with Colonel Corso. Because every time I would talk to him in a car, or every time I talked to him, I never remember anything. So in my pocket, I had a tape recorder. So I waited 20 years to translate from the tape recorder what he said, because the book came out this year. I waited 20 years because he's so controversial and people start bashing and, you know, discrediting and everything. I didn't want to go through that. So I waited a long time and before I printed the book. And the book is all audio tape. It's all audio tape. It is not anything that I thought about. The only part that's me is how I met Corso. Because I asked him everything. And I will talk to you about some of the things that are in the book. It's called Conversations with Colonel Corso. It's very small. If you want to know the real truth about why the secret is secret, it's because it's part of an economy. When he said night screening devices, he meant, when I met him, I asked him about the Santilli autopsy footage. I don't know if you people ever saw the Santilli autopsy. And I said, Colonel, what do you think of that? And he said, that looks real, because what I had in the file they gave me was a lens. It was like a plastic lens. He said that I would hold up and we would walk up and down the halls of the Pentagon where my office was, and I could see things. I could see the furniture through it without light. In other words, in the darkness, he could see things through this lens. So the beam that they had bodies of, that I had to memorize 180 pages, had a lens, that is not an eye. It's peeled off in the Santilli footage, if you saw it, they peeled the lens off because that's a light collector. So it collects light. So if you're going to have a lens like that from the beam, you're going to back engineer or create night screening. And he's Army, so he's going, oh great, we can make night screening devices for our soldiers in Vietnam. And that's what he said. That did something good. But all of those things that he had, the fiber optics, the integrated circuits and everything, all those things he had went first for military purposes and then went out into the general public. So you can get a night screening camera now. And you can get things now. The only thing you can't get, and he talked about a pen he had, and he'll talk about it, and unfortunately, I don't have the audio where he talks about it, because we don't have time. I have a 48-minute interview where he talks about part of what he was given was this pen, long black pen, that he thought the batteries were dead. Until he took it to Fort Belvoir, Maryland, where they put long low waves on it and a laser shot out of this pen. But this pen could cut during surgery and close the wound. But they didn't use the pen for that purpose. The Russians have that pen. You can read it in my book, and you can buy it. But the Americans had that pen and used it only for the laser part. Not for, and I have in the book this doctor from Durango who wrote to Corso and said, I need that instrument. Because that instrument is so advanced that it cuts, no blood, cuts, and then it closes. And so Corso said, look, I had that. I'm sorry that we didn't put it into the general public. And then in my book, he talks about how some scientists went to Russia, they saw that pen, and they were not allowed to bring it back to the United States. So technology is very important. And I, that am ignorant, I was just doing the story saying, oh, the reason why they don't talk about it is because the aliens scare people, and the reason why they don't talk about it is because it's so weird. That isn't the reason why this is secret. It's money. It's an economy. And the problem is that, as Stephen Greer says, and he is still my hero, we had the capacity in 1950 to have free energy. And that will not come out until every drop of the petrodollar in oil is finished. And we have no control over that. And that is why, are there back-engineered UFOs? Yes. In one of my books, I talk about, we don't know if it's our stuff or their stuff anymore. I don't know what I'm looking at over Belgium. There's a triangle, but we also have a triangle. We have also back-engineered the triangle. So, you know, the aurora. So, you know, I'm thinking, this is so mixed up. And it's mixed up with the technology and the capacity. And he said, weapons of war. That is the first thinking. So do you think the extraterrestrials I was talking about yesterday want to come to the United States? You know, nobody's going to come up and say, hi, how are you, where do you come from? They're going to say, get out of the craft, or, you know, we'll kill you, you take your craft and everything inside. So those people aren't going to go to anymore. That's the thinking. I've seen so many. I saw the Bushman tape that Richard Doan put. He goes, we don't care about the bodies. We go in, Bushman says, and we wanted the craft. And so with that kind of thinking, the idea that the most technologically advanced country is going to win something, we look at the situation, the secrecy behind it, as the idea of having the artifacts. And Colonel Corso had the artifacts. He was given them in a trade. And I will, in my PowerPoint, I'll talk about this. How do I get to the first slide? Okay. Italy was different. Italy had the television cameras there, and they interviewed him. Here we are in Monte Mario on top of Italy. And it's very sad for me to do this because I was very, very attached to the colonel, and he left me this tie he's got on. So I have it in my house. And he also left me his briefcase. And a lot of the people that I work with are no longer with us. He left me that tie. And I brought him to Italy. And my job, if you really want to know, besides being a journalist, I was bodyguarding him. I was watching that nobody came near him that wasn't supposed to. And exopolitics, in my view, should be, but this is just me, so everything I tell you is just my opinion, should be a formal academic study of the extraterrestrial presence on Earth and the political as well as sociological implications of this contact for the peoples of Earth and the governments of Earth. And as I told you, I have a diplomatic background, so I want it to be serious. I don't like it when they laugh. And if you, you know, this, and I'm going to tell you a little story. Paul Hellyer flew me to his 90th birthday party, and I was very, even though I've never spoken in Canada, he flew me to his 90th birthday party, and he said to me, Paula, everybody's laughing at me in here. Would you please give a 5-minute speech and talk about my involvement with UFOs? Because, you know, Paul is, it was for a minister. These were all ministers at this birthday party. They were older people. And they laughed. So I took the microphone and I said, when you have a pilot of Air France, Jean-Charles Dubuc, and I interviewed him, and he sees a UFO right in front of him over Paris, and he has 300 passengers in the airplane, and he doesn't know what to do, and the UFO is over a nuclear installation, do you think that's funny? And then I said, and Robert will speak to this, and when 10 missiles are shut down that have nuclear warheads at Malmstrom Air Force Base, and one after the other, and the poor, you know, soldiers don't know where it's coming from or what to do, do you really think that's funny? And this did happen. So is this not a matter of national security? That you couldn't hear a pin drop? Because we have 300 to 400 situations of matters of national security. In the Russian case, they activated the missile codes. You think the Russians aren't, this is 1969, so we have the Cold War and all this. You think that they are not upset that the missiles are going to take off? And they can't do anything about it? And this is the extraterrestrial's way, and I know Robert will go into this in detail, of saying, we control this. You people are playing with fire. And when Robert talks, you're going to hear exactly that it's real, because he was there when this happened. So nobody laughed. And Paul came up to me afterwards and said, thank you so much. Because people are understanding that this is not a joke, it's not cartoons, and it certainly is not entertainment. So let's get off the internet stuff. This is not fun. It is a learning, and it's a learning about what part this planet plays in the cosmos. What part this planet is, you know, what part of the anthropological study we are right now, because if we are at this point in our evolution, there are planets down there that are much more evolved, and there are planets this way that are much less evolved and much more primitive. And these people are going, I'm going to call them people, I don't like the word aliens, are going from here to here to here to here to see at what point we are. So anyway, the book originally was called The Day After Roswell. It was a bestseller, made $5 million later on, after he's dead. And it was Simon & Schuster. And criticism in the United States, people would stand, I'm not going to name the researchers, but it's in my book who went after him, very famous researchers who went after him. And spent their whole presentations just bashing Colonel Corso and Paul Hellyer. Their whole presentation was that. I remember once I was present at one of these researchers' presentations, and I started to cry because I knew Colonel Corso. And I went down to the bar, and Nick Pope was there. And I said, why are they doing this? Don't they have research that they are doing? Can't they talk about their own research? Why is their presentation going after other people? And Nick said, Paula, you don't understand. When you're paid to do that, you're paid to go after Colonel Corso. And you're going to go with the money. And he's the one that told me that. And I thought, oh, no. The real notes of Colonel Corso, and I gave two or three to you, to your group, you have his handwritten notes. It's called The Dawn of a New Age. Anyway, there's my magazine, and you'll see The Dawn of a New Age in a minute. There's all my crew. I'm kneeling down. I've been writing for X Times for a long time. That's our magazine. Adriano, Alberto, all the group. There's Maurizio in the green on the second from the right. That used to be the editor. He's the one questioning Corso, and now Lavinia Pallotta is the editor of X Times. If you read Italian, it's an excellent magazine. Here are my books. They're all online. This is the one that has the Spanish, the last 150 pages, all the Spanish from Luis Fernando to Ricardo Gonzalez and Sisto Paz and Veronica's interviews. This is the one. And I have decided to try to mold the UFO situation going towards bottom line, which is the raising of human consciousness. I can do data. I'm going to do data. This is nuts and bolts. This is data. I've been doing data for a long time with Colonel Corso, with all the crashes, with all the people, the military, and so forth. But there is Corporal Stone there. See him. He's next to Jaime Marsan, who will come with the latest research on the Nazca mummies and present it to the public. So the thing is that I have to have all of this, but what the bottom line is I don't want to scare the people. I do not want to depress the people. What I like to do is inspire the people to look at if we can become a better planet, if we can take responsibility for ourselves. And I do fun things. There's Sisto on the end. He will be there. You know, people know J.J. Hurtak. Don Schmidt, who is an excellent, excellent Roswell researcher. I have to have both come together. And the bottom line has to be what Essen's brilliant talk was about. And I hope you were here for that the first day. That the bottom line is consciousness raising. It's consciousness. The beings, the only thing you have in common with them, if they come walking in here, is consciousness. You certainly don't have an intellectual connection. You can't. They're too far evolved. And there's my friend Alan. There's Clifford Stone. And I've been working, I published Clifford Stone's book. He spoke into a tape recorder and he talked about the 12 crash retrievals he did. So I made sure that was out. You saw this yesterday. I'm going to tell you eventually about the contact that Colonel Philip Corso had. Here I am at the Washington Press Club as a journalist. I'm not a ufologist. I'm a newspaper person. So look at me as a journalist. And what I said to the people, and this is international. There's Gilda Bourdet from France. There is Jaime Maussan from Mexico, Antonio Junez from Chile. There's Robert Salas in the back. I'm there. There's Alfred Weber. There's Steve Bassett, Richard Dolan, Nick Pope, and Mike Massad. We were all there and in Washington at the press club, and I told the media, you have a responsibility just to do the story without making any judgments. And if Washington Post wrote the story the next day, the red vote, the blue vote, and the little green man vote. And they ridiculed our appearance at the Washington Post, ridiculed it, even after we were very serious people from all over, we were all over the world. The ridicule is still there. So the only way you're going to fight this is give them the real material. And don't go to internet. Read the books of the people that did this. Because a lot of what internet has is entertainment value. So I said to the journalists, if there's some kind of incident, like the one over Paris that Jean-Charles Dubac talked about, you have a responsibility to cover that. Because he was a pilot, he came down and he said, I don't know what to do. I had all these people in the plane. I was gonna crash right into this thing. He's only one pilot. He's only one of very many. So this comes from Odio Cavallo. This is a case in Italy. We have photographs, we have movies, we have sightings, we have enough stuff to know UFOs are real. The next question is, what do you want to do about it? So there's the book. There's the number of sightings that MUFON does. And I'm not going to bash MUFON. They do these things. I don't want to do these things. I don't want to put how many UFOs are over those states. I don't.